When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
COVID-29 does not stop us, right, Reggie? That's right. I want to thank you for showing up once again. I know it's not easy. We are social distancing. You even have a mask on. Good for you. I have still not been able to do the mask in public yet. I have to get over that. But we are social distance. There's a window between us. I'm alone here in the studio. You're in your studio. And yet we can communicate. And so we're going to do this again. As long we are saying F you to COVID, right? Okay, cool. All right, let me look here. Yes, as I'm speaking, I'm looking at those little needles bouncing around. That's always good news. Microphone's hot. Talent always simmering. I'll do the three S's, and then we shall get started. Write it in the book there, Reggie. Episode 203. Here we go. Star, smile, and strong. Today more than ever. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com as well as whatever platform you use to find your favorite podcast. And don't be afraid to subscribe to that platform and rate this podcast. And above all, tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic in a time of hibernation and sheltering in place. There is no better place to come on a weekly basis and hopefully be entertained. And in the words of Bill Cosby, and if you're not too careful, you just might learn something. If you like what you hear, as I said, I'll only tell your friends, but in these days of hibernation, I'm certain that you have a lot of free time on your hands. So if you like what you hear now, you can go back and listen to all previous 202 episodes of this podcast at WGNplus.com. Just go to the WGN website and hit podcasts, and there you will see a listing, and there you see Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. If there are 202 episodes in the vault, then guess what number this is? Welcome to episode 203. And I think this is this our third or fourth episode while in a COVID-19 shutdown? We probably should do a whole thing like Ted Koppel did in the late 70s during the Iran hostage situation. If you recall, maybe you weren't even born, but the show Nightline, which is still on ABC in the evening after the news, was actually born as a special 15-minute initially news update on the hostage situation where several Americans in the U.S. Embassy in Iran were taken hostage, and they were hostage for over, I believe, at least a year and a half. And so that show began with day two, and then all of a sudden it was day 40, and it became a fixture. And even after the hostage crisis was over, then Nightline and Ted Koppel stayed on. And it was because of the severity and the importance and the urgency of the hostage crisis in 1979 that Ted Koppel went from being just another faceless network reporter on ABC to one of the most influential and most watched and most popular, most liked reporters in television. But that's what made Ted Koppel. There was a special little update every night that they called Nightline, and it then turned into a regular show. But every night, every day, as the hostage crisis went on, Ted Koppel would have a countdown. So maybe we should start a – we should have two shows. Now. We should have two countdowns going. We have the overall 203 count of the podcast itself, which started in May of 2016. So we've had 203 podcasts so far. But then we should maybe start a sub-countdown of how many COVID-19 or in hibernation. Ba-ba-ba-ba. Podcast number 4, in hibernation. I don't know if it's been 3 or 4. I'd have to go back and look. I don't know when we officially went into hibernation. Things started to completely shut down right after the NBA canceled or suspended their season, which I think was March 12th, or that was March 11th. And on March 12th, everything started to just fall by the wayside. So I'll have to see. Maybe we'll count that, even though the official order to stay in wasn't given until maybe a week or so after that. But that's pretty much when all of a sudden heads turned and said, this is getting serious. But anyway, we are here for your escapism and your distraction or your entertainment, whatever you come to now to this podcast, whatever it is you come for. It's probably changed initially from what it was. Maybe it was just something to kill some time when you worked out and you enjoyed it, and now it may be something that you look forward to and is a main distraction because we have so much time on our hands, right? As Styx once said, too much time on my hands. So I want to talk about a couple of things in this podcast that have come to my attention. Talking about escapism, talking about distraction, it is impossible if you are either talking to people or watching television or scanning the internet, even if you haven't seen it, I would have to think by this point you have heard about the Netflix show called Tiger King. And it is a reality show slash documentary about an area that I don't think many people even knew existed to this extent, but the underbelly, and kind of a dark underbelly at that, if the world of tiger breeders and tiger trainers, who would have thought? In today's world, because of Netflix especially, the popularity of the documentary has skyrocketed. There's been a lot of older documentaries that Netflix had put on in its vaults. And as I said, you know, Netflix now, you cannot deny the impact. And as I've said many times, you know, whatever is on Netflix is new or is hip. Shows like The Office, which have been around, you know, was on and gone. It's been off the air for almost 7 years, but it's been in syndication. I think even while the show was still on, it was in syndication on various local and even, you know, cable stations like TBS and on your local stations. It's been on forever. But once it got to Netflix, millennials discovered it because it was on Netflix, and now it's the coolest show on earth, and they act as if it's just debuted. The show debuted in 2005. It ended in 2013. But when it's on Netflix, it's what's old is new. Schitt's Creek is another one. It debuted, what, in 2015, about 5 years ago, on a pop, called Pop TV. It's a very, you know, obscure cable network. No one saw it. It was also on in Canada, where it was originally produced. A couple, what, about a year and a half or so ago, they put the first three or four seasons on Netflix, and suddenly the whole world discovered it, to the point where a show that hardly anybody even knew existed now not only was a multiple Emmy Award nominee and won one for Catherine O'Hara from SCTV, but is now one of the most popular shows. Would not have had this new life if not for Netflix. So whatever is on Netflix now, whether it's old or new, whether it's original or something that they found somewhere else, when they put it up on their platform, it's new again. It's cool again. They've done their own shows, obviously, that really started the ball rolling for streaming services like House of Cards and The Crown and Stranger Things and many others. But here we are now with Tiger King, which is the new phenomenon. I think it's basically a phenomenon now because of it. It really, I guess you can say, because of people scouring Netflix and watching it more than ever during this shutdown over the last month or so, and which most likely will continue for a while. This was a word of mouth thing. People, I think, probably initially were curious to see what the heck is Tiger King. And a few people watched it. And of course, in today's world, that's all it takes. If there's some word of mouth or buzz between social media and other platforms, the word gets around. And out of nowhere, I believe the show debuted on Netflix on March 20th. And within a few days, I was starting to hear stuff about Tiger King. I didn't even pay attention. And then suddenly, I'm just reading story after story about Tiger King and Joe Exotic and this whole world of this show and the buzz, and celebrities were talking about it, and it's all over, you know, behind the scenes. And I was like, what the heck is this? To that point, I will admit to you that as much as I like to put my finger on the pulse of the pop culture world, and it's kind of my responsibility, when it comes to reality shows, or, and I would consider this a reality show, I think they consider it a documentary, but it's a reality show. I'd love to know how much of this is real. But I have not watched Tiger King. I have read about it. I understand what it's about. Apparently, you know, this mullet-haired, flamboyant tiger breeder nicknamed Joe Exotic, who's in prison for allegedly, and not even allegedly, he was convicted of putting together a murder-for-hire scheme to kill one of his sworn enemies and a woman who is an animal activist. And from what I understand, so that's kind of the subplot. And it is inhabited by a interesting group of oddballs and defectives and immature people, your basic reality TV fare. And so as I've seen this entire, in fact, the show was so popular, they even found a new episode to throw out to the people who have just been, you know, feasting on this show like a wild feline. they threw together some footage off the cutting room floor just to keep the Tiger King buzz going. So clearly, because people have a lot of time on their hands now, some shows that probably would not even pop up on people's radar screens are now getting views out of pure boredom. And a show like Tiger King, I guess, falls into that category that we seem to, we cannot deny this anymore. This is not just an anomaly, and it's not just a fad. I think it's a part of our behavior. I don't know why. I'm not up on a soapbox here to say I'm not watching Tiger King out of some, stand I'm taking against the show. I haven't watched it, and the reason I haven't watched it is I just don't have any interest in it. I never watched Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. I never watched Duck Dynasty. I never watched Living Lohan. I don't watch The Kardashians. I don't watch The Bachelor. I watched one season of Survivor when it first premiered back in 2000, when everybody watched it, when it was something new. And at that time, we were so naive to think that reality shows were really reality. And we really thought that Survivor was some kind of a legitimate competition. And if you recall, when the winner of Survivor was finally named, to show you how times have changed and how at one time reality TV was so exciting and new. It was the shiny new object that we all clung to. And the first season of Survivor took this country by storm, to the point that the winner, the next night was on the front page. The next day was on the front page of the newspaper. They were touting who won Survivor. Now, Survivor's on two or three times a year. They have different seasons two or three times a year. I think there's been 40 seasons. Nobody even knows it's still on. But in 2000, when it premiered, reality TV was relatively new, especially to network television here in the United States. It had been on in Europe, and people may remember the show Real Life, which I think was the first of the reality shows. It was on MTV of all places. If you remember, there was about five or six young people in an apartment living together in New York. And that was Real Life. Real Life is a great Albert Brooks film from the 70s that is similar to that. But Real World, was, I think, the first real reality show on MTV in the mid-90s. But when reality TV came to network television, and it had that kind of reach, it really became something. And then obviously it's taken off, and now it dominates a lot of network programming, as well as many cable networks. The Bravo network, which when it started was kind of a more of an intellectual aimed station on your cable or satellite dish dial. They used to show the West Wing reruns, and it used to be a lot more higher brow. And then Andy Cohen came along and turned it into a reality TV whorehouse. And so now, it's got all those Housewives of wherever. Never saw one of those either. Sorry, that's just not my thing. It's not for me, okay? And I'm not judging it. If you like that, that's fine. As I said at the beginning, it may be escapism. It may be a distraction. It may give the people who like those shows a little sense of superiority when you see how badly and immature and just plain stupid some of these people are on these shows, whether it's real or not, whether they're playing a role or not. The audience cannot be denied. There's a major audience for reality shows. We have thrust a lot of these people into celebrity. The term celebrity has been pretty much devalued because you have reality stars. These are, you know, just regular people that are suddenly, you know, celebrities for no reason except that they're allowing cameras to follow them around. And as we all know, even though we don't want to admit it, much of the action and much of the conflicts that all take place are scripted. Reality TV is basically like professional wrestling with your Hulk Hogan's and your Andre the Giant's and all those things. It's scripted. We know it, and yet the American public and the worldwide public still is able to look past that and enjoy it on, as I said before, an escapist level. And that's fine. But it's not for me. And I'm not trying to be a snob here. I don't find the entertainment value in it at all. I just don't see it. And I just don't understand, especially these kind of shows. We like to take these really broken, oddball, defective people and showcase them. And the sad thing is that these shows do have some consequences. It's not just harmless entertainment. For the viewers, it may be this escapism, this jolt of superiority, like, wow, at least I'm not as goofy or as crazy or as much of a jerk or as dumb as that person is. But these shows are not harmless in that the trade-off is we get the audience, I shouldn't say we because I don't watch them, but the audience gets this little sense of escapism and distraction and superiority. And in exchange, we give the stars, the people on these shows, fame and money, much more than they've ever had in their lives and much more than they ever deserve in their lives. It's completely unearned. They don't really have any talent, per se. All they have is the moxie to allow themselves to be filmed and show how badly they act without any kind of apologies in front of the world. And for that, they get paid handsomely. And they get to go on red carpets and they become quasi-celebrities. But there is a consequence. If you look at a lot of these so-called reality stars, they can't handle that money and that fame. And so, sadly, we see that at the end of the day, a lot of these reality shows and these people on them are quickly discarded as we move on to our next, you know, group of oddballs to celebrate and elevate into new stardom. And they cast these other folks aside, and they can't deal with not being in the spotlight anymore. And suddenly, they do not have any money coming in, and they revert back to their old ways. And sadly, their old ways combined with this now new found in quotes fame, as well as some maybe quick cash, leads to bankruptcy or broken homes or divorces or prison, and sometimes even death. And as I said, I look at some of these shows, especially like Honey Boo Boo and Duck Dynasty and now Tiger King, and I just don't understand why we have this insatiable appetite to elevate these people and to be so interested in them. And it's almost like when you hear people talk about Tiger King, they're all saying, oh, these people are so weird, they're so strange, and yet everyone's watching it. I don't know. If you watch it, I'd love to know, as I can take comments on my Facebook page. So when I post this podcast, and I post this podcast 3 times a week on my Facebook page. Feel free to share your comments. But if you do watch Tiger King, I'd love to know why. I really would. I'm not trying to make some stand here or try to be a contrarian. I understand the escapism. I said that before, but I would love to know why you like to watch it. And I'm not judging you. If you like that, that's fine. I have no problems with it. It is what it is. I have problems in that. I wish there were more intelligent shows. But nowadays, there are so many outlets that if there are some intelligent shows out there, they'll get made. There was a time when there was just a select few outlets for entertainment to be broadcast on. But my gosh, in the last year and a half, and especially in the last 5 or 10 years, the different platforms available for not only reality shows, but any kind of comedies or dramas. All these places like Hulu and Netflix and CBS Access and Disney Plus and HBO Max and all of these streaming services that are here and more to come, they're dying for content. So I would think that there used to be an old axiom, oh my goodness, where are the good shows? This show, this bad show, or even this reality show is taking the place of what could be a good scripted show. Well, that's not the case anymore. I think if you've got a good show, it's going to turn up somewhere because there are enough outlets now. So, you know what? That reality world is a world that exists. It has its audience. It has its people that love it, and that's great. I have not even dipped my toe into it. I don't know the names of any of these people. I don't know half the shows. I will readily admit it's a part of the pop culture world that I probably should at least have some knowledge about, but I am so not interested that I really don't care. And I don't think I'm missing anything. But if you could tell me why you watch Tiger King, I would love to get a little insight on this because it's been an amazing overnight sensation. And certainly the fact that people have time now to watch all these different shows is one reason why it's just out of boredom that people, well, what's this? And curiosity. And then they just got sucked in. I really believe that if there was no COVID-19 shutdown, I doubt that Tiger King may have, made some fuss, but would not have become this major phenomenon, which it is. You can't deny it. Even if you're in my camp, you can't deny that it's a bona fide hit for whatever reason. And that's what I'd like to hear from you. If you watch the show and if you like it, tell me why. No judgments here. I really am interested because I'm trying to figure out why I'm not interested in it. So maybe you could provide some insight and help me. So go to my Facebook page, and if you watch Tiger King, go on my Facebook page and under the comments when you see this podcast posted, just tell me why. I'd love to know. Of course, we're all Zooming today, these days, right? Who's Zooming who? Everybody's Zooming everybody. There was an Aretha Franklin song from the 80s called Who's Zooming Who? But now everybody's Zooming everybody. Another quarantine hit. Tiger King was a quarantine hit on television, and another quarantine success story is Zoom. Everybody is Zooming. Everybody is mentioning Zoom. This video conferencing, technology, it's been around since 2011. This is not even something new. It's been around for almost 10 years. But the shutdown, the hibernation, has elevated this thing that's been just one of many video conferencing technologies. There are several of them out there, right? Skype and other things. This is was a relatively little known, unknown video conferencing technology that most people in corporations knew about because of the multi-screen capabilities to have several people on a video conference call at one time, unlike Skype and things like that. Skype's got to be killing themselves, right? I mean, they pretty much had the lock on this. I mean, that everybody talked about Skype or FaceTime. But wow, Zoom zoomed. It literally zoomed. And you know, it's the key for any product, the goal of any product, is to make your product's name become a verb. If you, through marketing or whatever, in this case, pure happenstance, all the stars lined up for Zoom to become this major technology helper in times of hibernation and shutdowns. Somebody said, I've got this, you know, there's somebody probably that was from a, you know, that used it at work, said, hey, you know, I'm going to put together something on Zoom. What's Zoom? And they explained it, and here's how you get in. Easy access. It's free. You can't beat those two things. And suddenly, people were able to talk to many friends. Now people are having Zoom cocktail parties and Zoom weddings, and everything is Zooming. And that's what I'm saying. Zoom is now a verb. Zoom is a noun in terms of this technology, right? It's a noun. It's a thing. But we have it, but the use of this so quickly, just as almost overnight as Tiger King became a quarantine hit, Zoom became the quarantine technology. Out of pure word of mouth and pure necessity, pure need for people to communicate with others while they're locked in their homes. And Zoom has become a verb. Just like when we Google something, right? You say that, right? Google it. What you're really saying is use a search engine to find some information. That's what you're doing. But Google got out in front and became the hip, cool thing. Bypassed Yahoo. Yahoo was out there first, but Google had a buzz about it. And all of a sudden, I remember in the late 90s, people saying, oh, do you have Google? Google it. Google, 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 Google. And now we Google. That's what you do. It's a verb. That is what makes, that is something that makes a company an amazing success. When your product becomes the accepted name for the act that you're doing. Like, oh, I FaceTimed with somebody. See the D there? FaceTime is the technology. But what we say when we were on there, we didn't say that I went on a video conferencing technology to talk to my grandmother. You say I FaceTimed or I Skyped. If you can make your product name into a verb, there's the heavens are yours. And I don't know what's going to happen with Zoom in terms of a company and with its stock, because the stock market now is so depressed, so it's hard to tell. But in terms of pure name recognition and use, Zoom is the thing. There are no real winners. Let me preface this whole thing. There are no really winners in a pandemic, right? This is a very difficult time, a terrible time. People are getting sick. People are passing away. This virus is spreading around the world. But if you can take a step back and look at some of the byproducts of it, you would have to say that in an environment where there really are no winners, in quotes, Tiger King and Zoom certainly come pretty darn close in terms of coming out of nowhere, out of pure obscurity, to now become household names and household technologies. And in the case of Zoom, it's become a verb, which think about it. COVID-19 was able to do for the Zoom technology, which has been around since 2011. It has been able to do for Zoom what the company could not have done for itself in the 9 years of its existence. It was always around. And within a week, within a couple of days, I remember hearing, if you go back to mid-March, you remember hearing this term Zoom. And now it is said without any hesitation, and there is no question that everybody that uses it, when they talk to somebody, the assumption is you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's, we have to Zoom this. I have to Zoom that. I'm going to Zoom you. You want to Zoom? Zoom, 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 a Zoom. There was a time 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, if you said Zoom to somebody, people of a certain age would remember Zoom, the TV show. If you're in your 50s and older, maybe even your early 40s or mid-40s, you remember on PBS there was a show called Zoom. It debuted in like 1972, the early 70s. It was out of Boston. If you remember, they had a song. They would sing a jingle for you to send them mail. It was, write Zoom, ZOOM, Box 350, Boston, Mass. 02134. I haven't thought of that show in 45, 50 years, and I still can sing that song. Write Zoom, ZOOM, Box 350, Boston, Mass. 02134. I have friends who I don't know their address by heart. When we write our Christmas cards, I've got to look at the address, and I write them a Christmas card every year, and I've been to their homes many times throughout the years, over decades, and I don't know their address. But you know what I do know? Write Zoom, ZOOM, Box 350, Boston, Mass. 02134, even know the zip code. The theme song went, come on and Zoom, 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 Zoom. Come on and zoom a zoom a zoom a zoom. Come on, give it a try. We're going to teach you to fly high. Come on and zoom. Come on and zoom a zoom. And basically, it was a bunch of kids. It was on PBS. It was inspired by Sesame Street and Electric Company at the time, those kind of that new wave of educational shows in the early. You can go on YouTube and hit Zoom PBS show, and you'll see it. They have episodes up there. It was a primitive, pretty innocent, kind of crude show in today's world. I don't know if kids of today would even be able to spend 5 minutes with it. But I know in the early 70s, when I was a little kid, and I watched it a little farther. I don't remember when it debuted, but certainly by the mid to late 70s, I was watching it. Not all the time. I wasn't a big Zoom fan for a long period of time. I watched it for a while, enough to obviously memorize the song, which has stayed in my mind for 45 years. But yeah, it was a bunch of kids. They used to wear rugby shirts, like the blue and red rugby shirts, the patented kind of navy blue and red rugby shirt with the white collar. And they ran around and they played games and they had science projects and they sang songs and they, it was educational in that way. And they even had their own language. Does anybody remember the Zoom language of Ubby Dubby? Do you remember that? If you're of a certain age, you are thinking that I must be, I must have gone to my local marijuana dispensary here in Illinois and bought several different brands. I'm serious, folks. There was a show called Zoom. It did have that address. It did have that song, and it did have its own language. And you used to put an ub. I remember Ubby Dubby. So instead of saying hello, friends, you said hubby, frubens. You put the B in there, hubby. Instead of hi, that's the ubby and the dubby. Hubby, frubens, thibis, ibis, zaboom. Hubby, frubens, abai, abem, jibum. It was a simpler time, folks. It was a time of innocence. I don't think Zoom would catch on. Although, you know, if you have young kids, if you're especially in this time of shelter in home, shelter in place, go on YouTube, look up Zoom, put on an episode, and see if you have toddlers or young kids around the house. And when I say young, I say within between 5 and 6 and 7. Maybe 8 or 9, but I don't even think that much. But see if they're entertained by this. It was called Zoom. And remember, if you want to send a letter to them, you write Zoom, Z-O-O-M, Box 350, Boston, Mass. 02134. There was a girl on there. They had several different casts. The show was on for a long time, at least 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And every year they had a new cast, and I think that's what turned me off. There was one cast I really liked, and then once they were gone, I sort of lost interest. Oh, you know what? I'm remembering. There was a girl named Belinda, I believe, who could do this weird thing with her arms, and it's like you know how kids are double jointed. But she used to do this kind of a. I don't even know how you describe it. She would take her arms and kind of move them apart and together. Go on YouTube, hit Belinda from Zoom, and you will see her do this arm trick. And I remember when I was able to master it, I was so proud of myself. And I also remember there was a girl named Maura, who I think I may have had one of my first crushes on from Zoom. So clearly I have some major memories of Zoom. And about 5 weeks ago, when you said Zoom, most people of a certain age would have just thought of Zoom as that show, not now this ubiquitous technology that everybody uses. And I have to say this, and I will admit this, and I'm not doing it because, as I've said on many occasions here, a lot of times when there is a fad or there is a trend, I don't run to it. I always run away from it. Because I always feel if something is that popular and that many people like it, it can't be that good. Because I'm a little questioning the overall taste of the mass public. Maybe I'm a snob. I don't know. So when there's a trend, I usually run away from it, not toward it. And I have to admit this too. And it's not because I'm on some crusade, but over the last 4 weeks or whatever it's been since we've been hunkered down, I have not Zoomed. I have not Zoomed once. Now, the other side of the coin is, I haven't been invited to Zoom. I might Zoom, but nobody invited me to Zoom. I've received no Zoom invites. So who's Zooming who? Not me. Remember the ice bucket challenge about 10 years ago or so, where to raise money for ALS, people dumped ice on their heads, or they would, if you remember the whole ice bucket challenge, actually became it became opposite of what it was supposed to be. The whole idea was that If you didn't donate, you'd have to dump ice on your head. But then everybody started dumping ice on their head. I hope they donated money. But the whole idea was that you didn't want the ice on your head. When it was devised, when the task was devised to say, look, either you donate money to ALS or I'm going to dump a bucket of ice on your head. The initially, the person was supposed to donate so they wouldn't get the ice dumped on their head. But then it became a challenge to see if you could take the dumping and how creative could you get with the dumping of the ice. But and usually you were challenged by a friend of yours. And they would say, I've been challenged by, you know, Susie Smith and to donate this much money or the ice is on the head or whatever it is. Well, guess what? I would have been very happy to dump ice on my head. But nobody challenged me. I've been making jokes that I've been social distancing for 45 years, so what's the big deal? It's not a joke. So I don't watch Tiger King and I don't Zoom. So clearly, within the realities of the shelter in place, shelter in home world here, the COVID-19 shutdown, I am way, way not trending. I want to end the podcast today talking about a sad victim of this. You know, I've been joking a little around the COVID-19 realities of the byproducts of this, but this is really a serious time in our lives. It is a moment in history. We are living history. If you ever wondered what that is like, we are living it. If you wonder, you know, many of us were not around during Pearl Harbor, but that was a milestone event for people of that generation. Certainly 9/11 in 2001 or 2001. I almost broke my own rule there. was a milestone moment for those of us who were living. And now there's a whole generation that doesn't even remember that happening, as it's almost 20 years old now. There's people that may have been born, but they were maybe babies. A 20-year-old or an 18-year-old doesn't remember 9/11. But they remember this, and it's been 20 years, and so now this generation has its milestone moment. They have their COVID-19 pandemic. And this one is pretty serious. So as much as I've tried to bring a little levity and a little distraction, we really, underneath, we all know how serious this is and how our lives have been changing almost on a daily basis. But something happened last week that really hit me, and thankfully it's not something in my personal family. And if you have lost someone to this disease, or if you know someone who has it or had it and hopefully survived it but had a tough time, I'm certainly not diminishing that. If you had a close family member or close friend who either passed away or suffered through this, I'm not diminishing that at all. But I do have to say that, thankfully, up to this point, I do not know anyone who has COVID-19, either family or friends. And so I'm, and I don't have it. My wife doesn't have it. So we've been able to stay clear of it thus far. But someone who wasn't able to stay clear of it was someone who I had great respect for and one of my favorite musical artists and favorite singer-songwriters. And I'm sure, hopefully, you heard about the loss of John Prine. Now, John Prine, many people may be wondering what's the big deal. His death did get a lot of reaction and a lot of outpouring of sorrow and respect and extended obituaries online. Certainly the day after he passed away, the internet was filled with stories about John Prine and videos, and people were, you know, posting YouTube songs and things. But admittedly, John Prine was not a mainstream recording artist. For people of a certain generation, he was always an important singer-songwriter, but he had at best a cult following. But if you talk to many musicians, and even some of the artists and singers and musicians of today who are really into music, much more than their audience is in terms of deeper, more adventurous or off-the-beaten-path artists, many of them have covered John Prine songs and have great respect for John Prine. His death might have some people wondering, what's the big deal? And it's not that people are trying to be ultra cool by saying, oh, hey, I was totally into John Prine, man. But there are a lot of people that were, even though you may never have known it. You know, the majority of people in the world know the Justin Timberlakes and the Beyonces and the Michael Jacksons and the Lizzos and the Billie Eilishes and all those folks. But if you're a real fan of, especially that the singer-songwriter era of the early 70s, and even if you're a fan of some music today, especially if you're a fan of country music, many of the country music stars of today, even younger people, have recorded John Prine songs. So if you don't know John Prine, I would beg you to use some of this extra time that you have now when you've got some time to kill. If you're on your musical device, or you're on one of the musical platforms like Spotify or Pandora or YouTube or wherever you find your music and listen to your music, look up John Prine. And no, there are not going to be, it's not going to be like a Katy Perry song or a Beyonce song or a Eminem song or a Jay-Z song. It's not that. These are kind of folk, country-ish story songs. John Prine was an amazing lyricist. He told some unforgettable stories through his songs. He told them with great insight and great sly and wry wit, or just outright silly wit. He told them with great emotion. He told them with great purpose and great detail. What I would ask you to do is not only if you look up John Prine, but I would ask you that when you find a song, go online and hit lyrics to, and pull up the lyrics while you're listening to it, so you can really hear and see and read and understand what the songs are talking about and some of these amazing phrases that John Prine was able to come up with and turn a phrase like few songwriters ever did. Bob Dylan was a fan of John Prine. Bruce Springsteen is a fan of John Prine. These are the people that many look at as the ultimate songwriters of our generation, and they were in awe of John Prine. And what's so interesting about that is that he came from very humble beginnings, and especially for those of us in the Chicago area, John Prine was a mailman in a suburb of Chicago, a small little nondescript suburb of Chicago. And while he was on his mail route, he began to write songs in his head because of the monotony of the job. But by 23 or 24, in an amazing rise, just like Tiger King and just like Zoom, John Prine, that's why I'm bringing up now. It's ironic that he falls into this, but he had just as much of an overnight sensation kind of thing happened to him. In fact, in 1970, he had just started. He was in his early 20s. He was going up on open mic nights, and there was a small folk club called the Fifth Peg. And a young, at that time, newspaper reporter just walked in that place to get a drink. Not there to see anyone. But there was John Prine performing, and a young Roger Ebert, who just started at the Tribune himself. He was a movie reviewer, but he was so taken with John Prine's performance and the songs that he was playing and the stories that he was telling that he wrote an article that appeared in the Sun-Times in October of 1970, putting a spotlight on this guy that few really knew. He was getting a name around the Chicago music scene, but nothing of any major. It was more buzz and word of mouth, little cult kind of thing. But when Roger Ebert wrote this story, it certainly elevated John Prine into another level. And later on, at the time, two of the biggest recording artists and songwriters of the day, Kris Kristofferson and Paul Anka, came to Chicago, and they were begged. Friends begged them to see this guy named John Prine. So they went to another small kind of folk club in the Old Town area, which was kind of the hipster neighborhood of Chicago at the time. And they saw John Prine with hardly anybody even in the club. And within a couple of days, Kris Kristofferson had John Prine open up for him in New York. And within a week or so, John Prine had a recording contract with a major record label, Atlantic Records. And though he never became as big as Bob Dylan, he never had major hits, he was not a household name, he really became a songwriter's songwriter. And he was at the forefront of the Americana sound, like The Band and other kind of folk rock stars. And so I would just really encourage you to look up John Prine. You may have heard one of his most popular songs sung by Bonnie Raitt in the early 70s, and it's one of her staples, called The Angel from Montgomery. And she does an amazing version of this John Prine song. But I would suggest that that if you do, I would look up a few songs. So I'll give you a few song titles to look up. As I said, Angel from Montgomery. My favorite John Prine song, maybe of all time, is called Lake Marie. It's pure John Prine. Listen to the lyrics, get into the story. He weaves this story and like only he can. There's a song called Big Old Goofy World. And the one song that really was one of on his first album is called Sam Stone. It was during the Vietnam War, about a Vietnam vet who came home. And as we've seen, that kind of story of the Vietnam vets who were not respected like the World War II veterans. And this is a song about a guy that comes back from the Vietnam, or the Korean War, actually, but takes to drugs to ease the pain. And the great line is that your daddy's got a hole in his arm where the money goes, about taking heroin and morphine and things like that. Not a very happy song, but certainly poignant. But yeah, if you want to have some, there's a great song called Ain't Hurtin' Nobody. And I defy you not to love that song, with a great line that it starts with, I'm a walking down the street like Lucky LaRue. Another great song is called All the Best, and Illegal Smile. His last album was, ironically, was released in 2018, and it was the highest album on the charts that he ever had in his career, which is quite an achievement when you're 72 years old. And the it's called Tree of Forgiveness, and it's a great album. There's a song before its time. This album came out in 2018. There's a song called When I Get to Heaven. And it's another pure John Prine song. So look up When I Get to Heaven. I would say if you want to hear a really good sounding, contemporary, more contemporary sounding John Prine, if you're not totally into folk music, get his album and listen to his album called The Missing Years, which is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, John Prine album. And there's a song on there called Picture Show and All the Best, and the title song's Jesus Christ's Missing Years, where he fills in the years between of Jesus' life between 12 and 29. We know about Jesus when he was born up to his 12, and then we don't hear about him until he's 30 again. So John Prine fills in those years. I saw him perform several times. I saw him about 10 years ago perform at his old high school in the Chicago suburbs, Proviso East High School. He did a charity, and it was almost a 4-hour show. He was playing in the old auditorium of the school, and there was a lot of people he went to school with that night in the audience. It was packed, and he was telling these stories and name referencing streets and people and tying all these personal events into the songs or different lines, and it was a magical night. And I was lucky enough, just this past last summer, he returned to Ravinia Theater, Ravinia Festival, which is an outdoor theater venue in the Chicago area, and he played there about almost 50 years ago with Steve Goodman, another Chicago folk legend. And I do some writing for Ravinia Magazine about music and the acts that appear there. And I was fortunate enough to be able to write a story about John Prine to promote that appearance. And now in retrospect, I'm so glad I did, because I got the chance to really share my love and passion and respect for him and his music. And so this was a big blow. He was not a healthy guy. He had gone through some major health issues over the last 15 years or so. He had cancer in his neck, which took a toll on his physical appearance as well as his voice. And a few years ago, he then had lung cancer and had a piece, if not an entire lung, taken out. So sadly, he was very vulnerable for the coronavirus to really take its toll, and it did. He was in critical condition for about a week, and then on April 7th, his family announced that he had passed away, and immediately, the well wishes and the comments and the sadness were pouring out from regular fans as well as musicians from all over the world. And this one hurt. As I said, I'm lucky that I don't have any friends or family that have been taken by this COVID-19 virus, but for me, John Prine felt like a friend. I never met him, but I certainly got to know him through almost a 50-year career of some amazing story songs in which he did bear his soul, and he did touch your heart as well as your funny bone. He could make you laugh and make you cry within a couple of lines. He was a very special songwriter. He was an American treasure. And so if you knew of John Prine's work, I'm sure you are still feeling the sadness of his passing. If you don't know of John Prine's work, I would ask you, I would beg you, for your own good, for your own education, for your own injection of something special into your musical world, look up John Prine. At the very least, find the album called The Missing Years. I think you'll like that one. But songs like, as I said, Sam Stone and Illegal Smile and Angel from Montgomery and Paradise are really what John Prine is all about. Lake Marie, once again, my favorite. So we will miss you, John Prine. I did shed a tear when I heard about the news, and tears will be shed for John Prine, but smiles will also keep his memory alive in this big old goofy world of ours these days. We should all be able to walk down the street like Lucky LaRue. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com or at the platform where you find your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate this podcast, and, of course, tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Your loyalty and your devotion to this podcast is much appreciated. I hope you enjoyed episode number 203. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of the web to your screen. I wish you all the best. Take care, John.